Blog Talk Radio.
Dark past. They're not what they call sound in some cases.
Richard Pryor was one of the best comedians ever to hit the airwaves, but he had a dark side. And comedians seem to destroy themselves in some cases. So, yes, it's a hard situation when it comes to comedians. It's not an easy thing for comedians to make it. Comedians really, really go through a struggle when it comes to their craft. But most comedians try to make it. We got Chris back up on the air. Chris, you on the air? Go ahead.
Yes, I'm on the air. Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Fantastic. I was talking earlier while you were getting to the other phone. We were talking about the ups and downs of comedians. Is it hard being a comedian, or why are some comedians come from a dark side and it seems to catch up with them when it comes to their life? How hard is it to be a comedian?
Well, it's not hard to be a comedian because we all are comedians. You're a comedian. Your listeners are comedians. Because we have this humor. We have this humor mechanism inside of us where everybody is told a joke. So what comedians that do it professionally, what they have is a knack to be able to tell their whole story or their life on a consistent basis that makes people laugh. Some have it, some don't. Some work very hard at it and they get it. Some are just blessed with it.
Some people are just naturally funny. Some people are just naturally funny. I mean, they come out little kids. They become comedians. They're just funny. They make people laugh. You hear stories about certain comedians when they were little. They always would act to perform for their family. They was a class clown. They was just a funny guy, and they have to get that funniness out them. They have to go and try to do something to make them people laugh, to make people laugh.
Well, when I became when I was in senior high school my last year, they had the awards of who's going to be valedictorian, and they mentioned my name and said class clown. Now, I was insulted. Class clown. What in the hell does that got to do with becoming rich or anything? But now I understand it. But I wasn't basically a class clown in school. I just had a tendency to do imitations or impressions of my teachers and to mimic a lot of different things. Like as I said, I was on the morning announcement. So that was one of the reasons they put me on the announcement, because I could do impressions. So most people, they have tragedy in their life. A lot of people, a lot of comedians are doing now. Some of them, they're just doing it basically so they can be on stage. You know, they want to open up. They want to meet ladies. The serious ones tend to shine. A lot of the comedians that really are good, some of them don't really know because arrogance can sometimes get in their way and they don't have confidence as many other comedians. Sometimes it's who you know, too. Don't forget, this industry is dictated by those who choose who can go on television and who cannot. I mean, right now, YouTube, let's say this. Your platform on radio can be heard all across the world. YouTube, all across the world. So you can see your opportunity.
Hey, what? Jeez.
Did you cook what now? Chris.
come on, Ross.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, Chris. Go ahead. You were saying about YouTube. Go ahead.
Yeah, can you hear me?
No, we lost your audio. You have a bad
phone. I'm about to call you back on the house phone.
Okay. Okay.
You can't hear that.
Still waiting for Chris to get his phone together, but the comedian today, like Chris Thomas, Chris Ryan, just comedian today, doing things differently because of the internet is more comedian than it was in the past. Years ago, you had to go out on the road and make sure that people saw you. Now you can just go and be on the internet. You don't have to be in the room like that. So, internet is new right now. Chris.
Yes, sir.
Chris, yeah, you back on air?
Yeah, so I'm on the house phone now. Can you hear me?
That's what I want you to do. Yeah, okay, fantastic. Okay, tell us a little bit about where comedians are today.
Pandemic, they can either wait it out or I would call it overexpose themselves because comedy doesn't come easy because my comedy is based on my life and certain things that I've been through or from the past. So comedy is different than music because people can sing. They can say "I love you" a million times with different artists, and I'll pay your rent. But it's different than comedy because you're asked to pick, to choose, and switch on a laughing response, and that doesn't happen all the time. I mean, I can tell if someone has done my routine or done my joke. By the way, if I come into a place and I know that this joke about my life has worked in the majority of the places that I've been, and I say it, I can tell if someone has come to town and done use my material. And that's a crime within itself when people – it's all right telling the joke in a barbershop. It's all right telling a joke at the family table. But a lot of these young guys, they don't understand. They want to be paid early. They don't want to put anything in it. They want to just be funny. They want to say tomorrow. And don't get me wrong, I introduced David Chappelle on stage when he was 14 years old. But it took him a little time to get to where he is now.
Uh-huh. But he was good at 14 years old to go and do a show and get paid.
He wasn't in no hurry on getting paid. The difference between Martin and David Chappelle and people like Tony Woods, people like Wanda Sykes, they wanted to develop their talent, just like a quarterback. We talking about the Super Bowl. I don't know how many of your listeners are Buck fans or Kelsey or Chiefs fans, but you're watching that game because it's the best of the best. You're watching the game because it's the best of the best. And in comedy, why would you go out? I performed during this pandemic up in Upper Marlboro, Waldorf, out of this place called the Shark Bar. The owner called me and said, "Chris, I want to do a comedy show." I was like, "Well, how safe are you going to be?" He said, "Well, we're going to do social distance." And they sold out in a week. So people were hungry for comedy, Russell. Went out, excellent. Tony Woods performed, did his thing. Pierre, the one from How to Be a Player in the movie Babs, did his thing. And the show was good. Now, and then I had a young guy and Miss Mimi, they were on the show, this young guy who's hungry, and I've been trying to mentor him, and he's doing everything, and he's coming along great, but he's not in no hurry. He's willing, because I told him, once you get there, and if you get there without working at it, those talk shows and things that you do is going to show who you really are, and you're not going to be able to come back after that. It's like Jimmy J.J. Walker. He was only playing on J.J. He couldn't come out of that. My good friend, Reginald Ballard, who plays Brother Man on Martin, he's not able to get out of those characters to develop and be something else that he really wants to do because he has a passion for this job in entertainment.
But didn't J.J. Walker started out as a comedian? He was a stand-up comedian at the Comedy Store. That's how he got discovered, right? Wasn't he a comedian originally?
Yes, he was a comedian. Don't forget, he was one of the few exceptions. And we used to talk, and when we used to travel, me and him, we used to sit and drive, and we would travel, and we would talk about the industry. And he used to tell me all about the Dean Martin celebrity roast, how they really didn't think he was funny enough to be on the Dean Martin celebrity roast, and how they would tape him separate. I don't know how they would tape him separate from, you know, all the other people who was on the show. I don't know how they could put him in, but he used to explain how the entertainment, even Whoopi Goldberg, when I did her special after she won her Academy Award, she would explain the first movie she did was Ghost. And when she won, she didn't win the Academy Award for Ghost. She was telling me how the money scale was different, how Patrick Swayze and Demi Moore got more money than she did. And what was the dilemma between her, because she really was the center of attraction on the movie A Ghost.
So Whoopi Goldberg went from a comedian to being a movie star. Is that hard to do?
No. In fact, it's probably easier. If you notice, most comedians are the biggest stars. They're not action stars, let's put it that way, but they do. They can play multiple movie roles like Robin Williams did. Denzel Washington, he plays movies based on him being serious. But a lot of the comedians, they get an opportunity to play multiple roles. And you see them more. I don't know if they sell a lot more tickets at the movie theater, but you see him a lot in movies.
Tell us a little bit about the downfalls of being a comedian. You hear all the stories about back in the day when they were at the Comedy Store and they were doing these late night comedy acts, and the drugs was pushed in their face. Tell us about the drugs and why comedians do drugs and why some comedians, the drugs take them out.
As a police officer told me one time, he said everybody has their fix, or I don't think that's the word that he has said. He was saying everybody has some type of addiction, whether it's alcohol, caffeine, or drugs. He said, but in entertainment, don't forget, Russell, it's a late night business. It's a late night. A lot of shows sometimes are not over till 10 or 11 p.m. or later, depending on how many shows you do. And after that, it takes a while for people to wind down. So a lot of them are, let's put it this way, they're not strong. When they get addicted and get strung out, they're just not strong. They don't have the willpower. They need help. When you're talking about, I used to smoke cigarettes and I gave them up. I smoked cigarettes for several years and I gave them up because guess what? I don't need nobody to get, you know, to help me on something that I started myself. I have to stop. You know, I have to sleep sooner or later. So while you sleep, you ain't smoking or you ain't drinking. So what is it that makes people weak? Don't forget, Richard Pryor, his Achilles heel was when he was freebasing, he didn't have the strength to actually stop until he burnt himself up. That was his turning moment where he had to stop. So it's kind of hard to say because a lot of entertainers, singers, even doctors, even police officers, even people in high places do those things. Some realize it, it's not good for them, and some don't. Some use it as an excuse. That's why they have those drug hotlines, and because some people, their willpower is not as strong as those who say, "Man, that's not me. I care what I look like."
Excellent, because the drugs seem to take out a lot of comedians. They seem to use the drugs, and the drugs seem to take over their life. And at that point, their life becomes null and void because the drugs overshadow their craft. And then you have some comedians like a Jerry Seinfeld. What was his niche? Why did he become such a big comedian as far as a white comedian is concerned? He's supposed to be like the cream of the crop of the white comedians.
Well, don't forget, the audience is who selects you. The people who pay Jerry Seinfeld, first of all, they're Jewish, and which is good. They look after their own. And don't get me wrong, Jerry Seinfeld's show was hilarious. It was hilarious. And they go by viewers. His show was a high-rated show. People watched the show. So he was able, through the advertisers, to be able to command $10 million an episode. And when he sold his franchise of the Seinfeld show, they gave him that big lump sum of money, maybe $100 million. So he was clever. It depends what kind of comedy you like. Some people like comedians and all they do is talk about sex because that's the only thing they understand. Some people like intellectual comedians, those who, well, you have to think about, you know, where is the joke inside of the actual joke. So Jerry and a lot of people, it's like Kevin, he's milking the cow. And I'm happy for him because I met Kevin in Philadelphia many, many years ago when he was young and struggling and trying to get there. But he's milking the cow. Now, I call it being seen too much when he has a movie career and you see him in movies and now he's hosting that stay at home couples show. You know, cause people they'll love you, and then all of a sudden they'll think they sing you too much. But being that Kevin Hart is not a tall man, he's not threatening. He's probably going to have a long, long life. He's going to be just like probably Sammy Davis Jr.
Mm-hmm. He'll sustain the world of comedians. Well, what about comedians when they get their personal life override their career life and people stop wanting to see him, like C.K., whatever that, I think his name is C.K. something. He was a big white comedian, but then he started doing stuff on stage or with sex. Why does that take away from the comedian? Now, like Richard Pryor was all kind of wild and it took away from him, but now, if you do certain things sexually or the Me Too or anything that has to do with women, it just knocks your career out. Look at Bill Cosby. As talented as he was, he's not revered anymore because of this sex thing. Why is that such a big thing to take a comedian's work away from him?
Well, I'm very surprised that as much as Bill Cosby did for black universities and foundations, that he even spent even a week in jail because he was so old. And he was open to what he did. Now, I kind of followed the trial, and they really didn't base his drugging these women, that he had sex with him. I don't think Beverly Johnson. I know Beverly Johnson. She never said that he did. She just said she thinks he gave her something to relax But people are the same ones that choose. Now, I don't know personally that people make sex the front runner of anything in life. They think that if you have money, but this is the way I see it. Sex is a poor man's reward because anybody can have sex. It don't matter if it's with the Kardashians or Janet Jackson. Everybody can get sex. Maybe people are looking at it looking a little different. They're looking at what a person look like. I don't look at what a person look like. As long as they nice, they don't have any bipolar issues, and they're clean at the end of the day, because that doesn't say that we're going to get married. Sex doesn't make that we're going to get married or relationships. My mom and dad was married for 67 years. Some people are married for 40-some years, and they get a divorce. Like, where are they going? Where is she going, and where is he going to start all over again at a certain age? As I get older, I don't know why sex is one of the biggest things in the world that commands, maybe because we look at every lady as our mother and grandmother, and we feel that, start like with the Me Too or the LGBTQ community. I don't know. I'm going to let God deal with all of that. I'm just going to stay in my lane. And for those people that I know who are, and they ask me a conversation about it, everything to me is about sex. It's not about relationships. They don't focus on relationships no more, Russell. They focus about who's in bed. And look at all these thousands of STDs out here. So there's an STD start. Now they want somebody to find a cure for it so they can go and have sex or do whatever. So all I can just say to you, bro, is I don't know why. I don't believe in rape. I don't believe in incest. I don't believe in a lot of things. But for those people who are religious, you just got to let God take over. And that'll be the end of the story. That way, by me talking on the phone, I don't give a clear opinion because there's nothing that I can say. There's 300 million people in America. So I'm not the judge over them. I didn't make it snow the other day, and I am not going to make it rain when it rains. All I do is wake up, hopefully, and let people know and pray to God that I love everybody, forgive everybody if they've done something wrong, and hopefully everybody do the right thing and think the same about me.
Excellent. That's what you need to do in life, man. You need to make sure that people are who they are and let God handle it, man. Don't get into people's business. Don't figure out what they're doing. Figure out what you're doing, and make sure life is good. But as a comedian, making people laugh has got to be the greatest satisfaction ever. Do comedians have a staple joke that they always tell, or do they always switch up and have to tell something new, or do you keep the same joke over and over again?
You keep the same joke. Let me explain why. I've been to your affairs, and you have 700 people there, right? You have 1,000 people, Russell, at your affairs. Now, if I went on stage and performed, there's 6 million people that live in this area. If I do another show the next week for you, I'm looking for another 700 people. Not always looking for the same people, because there's been many times I have done a certain material or I haven't, and a person will walk up and say, well, why didn't you do your joke? I think that's your signature joke. So when you live in an area, I mean, people go to open mic night to work on material, but don't get me wrong, you don't linger that joke out to lend it to someone else so they can go to a city like you ain't going, like I'm not going to go to Baltimore and perform, or I'm going to go to Philly or go to New York. So they're going to lift your joke, go and tell another city in another venue your joke, and get your accolades, get your laughter, and then they're going to come back home and look at you like nothing happened, waiting for you to tell them another joke so they can go use it somewhere else. So even though it's a happy thing. But I don't know nowadays, are people really laughing? Look, man, we've been in a pandemic, Russell, almost a year, going on a year and a half. I found out a good reason why to wear a mask now, other than that pandemic. You can wear that mask. I should have been wearing masks a long time ago. If you're going to the bathroom after somebody, put your mask on.
Mm-hmm.
If a person talks to you,
pandemic
breath,
saved the game.
Put your mask on.
You have to be right, man. Put your mask on. Put your mask and protect your ass.
Put your
man.
Mask
on.
If your lady want to do some kinky sex below the belly button, put your mask on.
You got to keep your mask on, man. This pandemic changed the whole attitude of what people are looking at right now. You got to change your attitude when it comes to the pandemic. But this thing about stealing jokes, Chris, that is a problem.
It's a crime. It's a crime.
But comedians do that. You remember Shake and Bake?
Oh, yeah, David Rivas,
man. They ran David Rivas out of town, and I used to talk to him and try to console him because he was stealing jokes, man, and people and the comedians ran him out of town.
Yeah, they did. And guess what? It's a little bit more intense now because of social media. And people, and guess what? My buddy, a friend of mine named Marlon Jackson, he always used to tell me, he said, some people ain't wired right. It's like a person who drives and drinks, and they take their license, and they're out driving again and get pulled over again. They're not programmed right. Now, a lot of people who may be listening saying, what's that? It's doing the same stupid thing over and over and trying to find your own excuse out of it. It is like if you argue with your lady or you argue with your lady about something and she realized that she's wrong and she doesn't, and you keep arguing about nothing. You know, it's like, don't forget, this pandemic has broken up a lot of relationships, Russell. People, a lot of my buddies, they thought that this is what they've been saying about being at home with their lady. Nobody wants to keep having sex all the time. I said, well, even though y'all live together, what do you mean? Y'all got to have a romance just because y'all see each other every day. I said, this is a time to step up your game. If you wasn't good in bed, brother, you need to learn now because you got time and you ain't got no excuse for it because you can't run to the other girl. So that's what people don't understand about this pandemic. This pandemic is easy. If you come out of this pandemic better than you were, believe me, you have been paying attention. God is in your soul, and you're going to make it. First of all, don't forget, we go out to eat, we go out to go shopping, and we've been spared from this virus. I know friends, and I know people who done passed away from it. Now, I'm hoping that wearing your mask and keeping that sanitizer on your hand can keep you away from getting this virus. But don't look at the Senate and the Congress people. Now, I'm trying to figure out how did they get it, because I know they were saying that it really doesn't matter. They want to do some herd immunity, meaning that if everybody catch it, then it'll go away. But would it really go away? Russell, you look, since the pandemic, look, you still here. You ain't got sick. I wonder what Barack would say. You know, Barack, he's been cautious. Did you see him for the inaugural?
Right, I saw him, yeah.
You see Barack was up there? And you imagine what he was saying behind his... You can imagine what he was saying behind the mask. Seems like a good day. Yeah, seems like a good day, everybody. That's probably what he was saying. It's cold out here. I guess everybody doesn't know it's cold. probably looking at myself. Don't look good.
Chris, you made a point in your career to do impressions. What got you to do impressions, and how come you become so good at it? I mean, what made you so good at becoming an impressionist? When back in the day, you had Rich Little. You didn't have a whole lot. Sammy Davis.
Yeah, Rich Little, George Kirby, Sammy Davis Jr. did impressions. The one who played the Riddler on Batman, George Gorshin.
Right.
Yeah, it was a bunch of, I guess I was programmed by television when I was young, and that's what people don't understand. You are programmed with what you see and you like. I was programmed by Superman. I wanted to fly, man. I wanted to save the world. That was my only mission, was to save the world, Russell. And I jumped off a house one day. I lived in Cambridge, Maryland. My father was a chemist, a school teacher, and the bus always stopped in front of our house. So I immediately jumped off the bus, ran upstairs. I had it timed. I came off the roof with a towel around my neck, and I was going to show all the kids that I could fly. And I jumped off that roof, and I was airborne for around 2 good seconds. I jumped pretty high off the ground just to get myself up in the air. And I came down off that roof, and I broke my arm, and I guess the Almighty. So we got to find something else. And later on, I start doing impressions like Donald Duck. Start doing a bunch of cartoon characters, and the rest was history.
So awesome, man, because people still like impressionists. I mean, if you can do somebody's impression of someone and sound just like them. There's a black comedian, I can't think of his name, but he was on Saturday Night Live for a short period of time, and he did all the impressions almost exactly like the person. I mean, you couldn't tell. You could almost sound like he sounded exactly like the person. He was on Saturday Night Live, but I saw him on a couple of YouTube clips, and he's really a good impressionist when it comes to doing Obama, doing Chris Rock, doing, you know, he does a lot of good impressions. He really is good. That's his
cool,
niche.
Cool Bubba Ice is one of them. He was to be on the Apollo Comedy Hour.
Right.
But what's happening is a lot of them, they can do the impressions, but they have no material. They
right.
have no material. And you remember when I first started out, Russell, that's all I was doing. I was doing John Wayne. I was doing Jesse Jackson. But you have to have some type of backup, because I was at Rodney Dangerfield's club. And Rodney Dangerfield was there. He was walking around in a bathrobe and some bedroom slippers. And they had an impressionist on before me. This white boy could play a guitar, too. He was playing the guitar, doing John Denver. He was doing Neil Sedaka. He was doing Neil Diamond. He was doing everybody. So then all of a sudden, I come up. I tell my manager at the time, I said, man, I'm not going to do good tonight. He was like, why? I said, because that guy just took away the element of surprise. Most people think I'm going to be, the audience are going to think I'm trying to imitate and trying to do him just because he just did it. So I was right. I went on stage. I started doing my Wolfman Jack. All right, that's old Wolfman Jack. Howard Cosell, this Howard Cosell, of course. Let's think about the Red Father. Listen, Bubba. He's the big one, Esther. And no laughs at all. Rodney Dangerfield, he knew what I was trying to do. Rodney Dangerfield walks over to me. He says, hey, kid, I see you're pretty good. Why don't you come back next week? He won't be here.
Yeah, so he knew what you were trying to do.
He knew what I was trying to do, so he told me to come back next week. That impressionist won't be there. So now he knew. He said, well, I enjoyed you, but the audience, they don't understand. They thinking that you're trying to imitate dude that was just on. So the things are really different, Russell. It's going to be different in entertainment. And I don't think a lot of people are going to go out. We got to try to push black people and let them know that the Tuskegee experiment is no more. Since then, we've had black senators, congresspeople, mayors, governors, president, vice president, and things are a little bit different now. So people need to get their vaccine. To tell you the truth, on my vaccine, I'm going to wait for everybody to get theirs, and then I'm going to tell them, why do I need to take mine now? Everybody's vaccinated.
That's a good point. I need to take mine. Everybody else got theirs, right? Nobody can't give me anything no more. I can't get no vaccination. I like that, man.
I'm going to tell them, Russell, everybody got theirs. What I need to take mine now for?
I'm good to go now.
I'm good to go. So that's how comedy comes, too, man. You just think about it. You think about the process. You think about the process. It's like when you do your award ceremony. You think about the process on why do you give out awards? Why do you give out those beautiful little Emmys? I mean Grammys. I mean Oscars, right?
The Oscars. Well, the Oscars. You know, the Be That Magazine Oscars, man. They love it, man. People love it.
That is fantastic. Mm-hmm. This is Black History Month.
We couldn't do it this year, you know, or last year. Pandemic got us, but we're coming back strong. 2023, 2024 probably. We're gonna do the Oscars.
I
want to
be one of the co-hosts. I want to be on one of the co-hosts.
Yeah, I'll have you get, help with the Oscars. It'll be one of the MCs. I had Renee Allen do it last year.
Oh yeah, that's my baby. She was on the radio.
I was on
WOL for almost 3 years, and 95.9 until the pandemic hit. So you were talking about the awards, and yeah, the reason I used award-winning comedian is I think I was a little bit disrespectful to myself, because here I won 2 TV awards, Russell, and I was given those awards by my peers. I didn't force the hands of those people who selected me, and they gave it to me for best impressionist. Now the other award I won with Eddie Murphy, Sinbad, Richard Pryor. It was an award called the AHA Awards, and maybe one day I can let you speak to, if you want to. He was the guy, the founder of the AHA Awards. It was in California, and everybody was there. Bubba Bexley, Marla Gibbs, Debbie Allen, the young lady who played in A Different World, all of them was there. All of them received awards. And people need to and it was a TV award. So the TV awards meant it was nationwide. It was broadcast. Because I didn't even show up at this ceremony, Russell. I thought it was just, I was like, okay, impressionist. I'm nominated for best impressionist in the country. So I'm going against everybody. I'm going against Tommy Davidson, Eddie Murphy, probably. I don't know if he was in that category or not, but I know that he was. He won the award, and he sent an acceptance letter, Sinbad. And when I won, I thought it was politics. And I won for best impressionist in the country. So I always put that on my fly to let people know, especially those who didn't grow up watching me on television. People are looking for information now. That's why when they do a movie, they can just say Denzel Washington. They don't say Denzel Washington. They say Academy Award winner Denzel Washington. For those young people who don't remember Denzel when he won an award 10 years ago. We're talking about you're trying to have a following, so you're trying to get the next generation. So once they see Academy Award, then they know, okay, Chris Thomas, award-winning comedian, that he's going to bring it. That award means something, because he's not going to put have no one put him out there like that if he did mm-hmm. not achieve it, because they would be lighting up the YouTube or Instagram or Facebook saying, "Oh, that dude didn't do this, that dude didn't do that." But undisputed, I won that award fair and square.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're excellent, man. What you do is super excellent, and you can't deny it, man. You're one of the best. Now, what about Saturday Night Live? How do comedians is it to a comedian's advantage to get on Saturday Night Live, or how does that work? Because you have people that got on there
for Saturday Night Live. I did. I auditioned, and they hear my words and hear me good. This is what the producer said. He said, "Young man, you are fantastic." He said, "If we didn't just hire this guy named Eddie Murphy, we would have hired you." And that was the end of the words before I left out of Rockefeller Center. That's what he is saying, and I never looked back. He said they had just hired Eddie Murphy, and even though they gave me an audition, they said, "Huh?"
Eddie Murphy didn't stay on Saturday Night Live that long, though. He didn't stay
there. Well, I had never looked back and never went back to another audition. I just, once he told me that certified me, I was good enough to be on the show. But back then, they didn't have that many black characters, and I guess they didn't want me to. Well, now they do it. Now they can have two and three, you know, black impressionists on one show, like in Living Color. But back then, when Eddie Murphy, don't forget, this is over 30, this is 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
This is 30 years ago, Russell, just when things were just breaking, you know, open in television. I mean, BET had just started.
That's the longest running comedy on TV. Saturday Night Live, one of the longest running comedies.
Oh, yeah, of course. Of course, because they're basically dealing with things that happens in everyday news. So if something happens, happens today and they can write about it quickly, they'll write about it. So they're basically, it's basically a political satire now on television. It's not really about relationships. Everything is about what happens at the Senate, what's happening in the White House.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, that's all they're writing about. Yeah, that's all they. They're not doing stuff that they would normally do. That's like CNN News and MSNBC News or Fox News. They're basically trying to tell the politicians what they should do. What the last time you seen a news station where they don't just cover the news? They telling us what they think they should do.
Hmm. Wow! Well, like you say,
I watch the shows. I watch all of those shows, and I was like, "This is some bull. Why are they? They can run for office. All of them can run for office. They can run for office and see how hard it is. But it's easily quick to judge and try to tell somebody what to do, because if they do it and it don't work, they're going to say, 'Why did you listen to me?'"
Wow.
So I don't look at the news no more, man. I keep it on the travel channel, and
so you don't look at TV no more?
I do. I look. Oh man, that's all I've had. I haven't been able to see. I've been celibate for over a year and a half now. I haven't been able to see my boo. I ain't taking no chances, bro. I know my body is strong enough, but no need to even, chancing it over, you know. You know, I don't know how good you're going to be after a year and a half, Ruffa. Can you imagine?
Oh, it's going to be awesome, man. After a year and a half.
No. Don't forget, you've been out of the ring. You've been out of the ring. It's like a boxer. You've been out of the ring for a year and a half.
Could you come back and do a knockout punch? Do you have a knockout punch?
Right, she's telling you to come in with all things slinging.
Yeah. Like you said, you've been out the ring, man, for a year and a half. Huh?
You've been out of here for a year. You might have to hit the bell by yourself. Bing, 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 bing.
Yeah. You ain't lying about that, man. It's critical, man. It ain't for the weak at heart, man. It ain't for the weak at heart, bro. No,
it is,
man.
Don't forget, that's endurance itself. It was once said, doctors said, doing that is better than running.
Mm-hmm.
That's it, because that right there is an endurance taker.
Well, people who have someone with them in the bubble, if you got quarantined and this person was inside your bubble and they're there with you now during the quarantine, during the pandemic, and you had someone that loved you, can take off the mask for you, give you an open mouth kiss and have sex with you during the pandemic, COVID-19, they love you, and you're in a position like most people aren't in that position. They don't have it like that. So basically, you're taking a chance in some cases if you try to get something new. But if you was grandfathered in, if the person was still with you now, they're in the bubble with you now, then you better count your blessings. And like you say, try to make this thing work, because it's hard out here. Relationships are hard, but it's even harder during the pandemic. And it ain't no joke. It's crazy right now during the pandemic.
You're exactly right. You know what I did, Russell, though? I started going to, like, hotels and just chilling. That was like my little vacation away. I love the Marriott's a lot, that and the Embassy Suites. So I would go to the Marriott's and get a room and just chill, you know. And sometimes that was like getting away. You weren't around a lot of people. They didn't have full capacity anyway. So I would go and just go in there with my disinfectant and disinfect the room, and everything was cool, you know, and just hang out. It was kind of like a good getaway. And I have a buddy named Ron who has a house up in Anne Arundel Bay. He has a house on the water, and we was going out there fishing. And I was, you know, I told you I have a TV show. I have a TV show out here in Bowie, and that's helped me through this pandemic too. So the show is like on Comcast 77 and Verizon 11. At night, it comes on every night at 11 p.m. So I call people like George Wallace, Genuine, and ask, can I use their videos on my show? And I've been putting together some hellified shows, man. I really have. And I gotta get you on there as soon as this, everything gets better.
Get me on there. I'll send you a video. Yeah, get me on there. Also, like George Wallace did something so phenomenal. He had a show in Las Vegas for 3 or 4 years. How hard is that to do a show where you're there every single day? How hard?
Well, it's a residence. Don't forget, they coming in and coming out. You're not really performing for the residents, the people who live there. They can hardly care less. They might come and go to the clubs and use the bars as their little watering hole. But George Wallace, I mean, don't forget, man, he's one of the prime. I call him the godfather of comedy because he's consistent. He was on Conan O'Brien's show the other night, 2 days ago. And he sent me the interview. But it's called a residence. That means you live out there and you're performing. Eddie Griffin had one. Monique had one.
Yeah, Monique and Eddie Griffin. Like a lot of comedians were big at one time, but then now, what do you think about D.H. Hughley? He was an intellectual comedian. They say out of all the comedians, D.L. Hughley got to do a CNN commentator thing because he was so smart.
Yeah, he got to, but it didn't last long because everything is based on your knowledge on everything. and whatever your opinion is and how far. I think they, I'm not really sure because he had the show on Radio 1, and what happened was, and DL is a real good friend of mine, and I don't think that he would have did, he would have done anything wrong to jeopardize his money, first of all, and his reputation. And I think that he had some liquor. He had some liquor on CNN one day. And he was sitting there talking to them while he was drinking his liquor. And that was, that's when that came to an end on CNN.
What happened with Radio 1 then? Radio 1 still?
Same thing. Same thing.
Well, how come the Breakfast Club could have liquor all back in the back of the View, and they could drink liquor online, and nobody said anything about the Breakfast Club?
Because it's a different type of show, and it's who that cast is. The cast of the Breakfast Club is the Breakfast Club.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Once you start, that's the way you're going. This is your format. You write your format and say, yeah, they will be drinking. They might be smoking. They might be doing this or that. And that's the way it is.
Yeah,
who watch the Breakfast Club. Everybody don't watch the Breakfast Club. Certain interviews they do, just like Sway in the Morning. But once you start going,
everybody tries to do it. Like you got Sway in the Morning, you got everybody wants to be a talk show host, like Steve Harvey. You know, they want to try to be like a video talk show host and get a program like I think the guy that played Ray in the movie, what's his name? He got a talk show, right?
Who?
The gentleman that played Ray. What's his name?
Jamie Foxx.
Jamie Foxx. He got a talk show, a radio show in the morning or something, don't he?
Well, no, he had a serious radio show called The Foxhole. But he's so Kevin Hart.
Yeah.
So it's Kevin Hart and Earthquake. Earthquake is the host of that.
Oh, so he's not on the radio anymore, on Foxhole no more?
No, he doesn't. I think if he comes on as a guest. I was just tell people do not get in politics if you do get into politics and talking about politics and your closet ain't clean, get ready for some backlash, because anything that you've ever said on Instagram or Facebook can be tracked back. So I always try to tell people, the only thing I put on Facebook or Instagram is something spiritual. No one is going to be there to hurt God. So I try to keep my opinions to myself, because at the end of the day, what is it going to matter anyway? Is it going to change the world?
Is it fair? Comedy was different 20 years ago. You could talk about things 20 years ago. Is it fair that if you told a joke 20 years ago, is it fair to bring that joke up now and say you homophobic, or you use the S word, you know, you use the N word, you call a homosexual this and homosexual? Is it fair to do that? Because that was the way it was back then.
Think what the acceptance is with the LBTQ community is, no one is stopping people from what they want to do or what their preference is, because we all have friends that, you know, dib and dab probably in that life. But the whole thing is, as they don't want to be shut up, nor do you. You can't say accept what I do and then don't accept what I believe in. But everything to me basically comes down to sex. When you was growing up, if you didn't live in a rich family, you had to share a bed with your brother or maybe even your sister. So it depends on what happens during that time. But as I said, I don't get into what people personal life, because I'm not coming and knock on their door to try to see. It doesn't really matter to me. It only matter what Chris is doing. Only time that I think that people that God will say if it's right or wrong, and everybody goes to church. They got pastors. If they ain't preaching about it, I'm gonna stay with what the book says. And then again, things may have changed for God. You might not even know. But the way I was raised, and in a Methodist church and going to a Baptist church, it says what's right and what's wrong. But don't believe me. Do whatever you want to do, because that's between you and the Almighty. And don't get me wrong, I ain't perfect. Oh Lord, I ain't been perfect. You know what I'm saying? It says that really no one is supposed to get involved unless they married and stuff like that. So that counts me out.
Well, Kevin Hart was set to do the Oscars. They had him geared up to do the Oscars. And he was already going to be paid anything. Good choice, but he just did to host the Oscars. And he backed off because of something he said. A joke or whatever he was telling years ago. But that was a joke.
I know, man, but that's how it is, man. Everybody, it's the acceptance or he's, brother. Now, if you want to get there, Russell, let's go into, I wasn't upset that Andrew Mama was still on the pancake box. Now, the dude that I'm mad at is the one that said, take Andrew Mama. Andrew Mama looked good. She didn't look like she was from slavery or nothing. And then Uncle Ben's. That right there is what really made me mad. When that dude came up and said, take Andrew Mama off the pancake box. And I said, well, hold up. I wasn't looking at Andrew Mama pancake. I wasn't looking at the box. I don't think that's a derogatory. I don't think that hurt anybody's feelings or Uncle Ben's. I think
back
they're trying
to
take away history with Kevin Hart.
When you got an Auntie Mama pancake box, Auntie Mama looked like somebody in your family. Didn't look like somebody was derogatory. She didn't look like a bad black woman or something like that. It looked like a woman. I had Auntie Mama pancakes and was sitting on my table as a kid. I didn't say, oh, that's a derogatory picture of a black woman. That looks really bad, I had a mother or grandmother or somebody look just like that.
And they had Uncle Ben's with a tie on. They had Uncle Ben's all dressed up with his black tie. Man, I haven't eaten no pancakes since that, man.
Sometimes people take it too far, Chris.
They take it too far, but we're the ones.
If I told a joke 30 years ago, 30 years ago, that joke was appropriate for the seat. There was no LGBTQ 30 years ago. There was no, I mean, as a child, when I was a kid, homosexuality was not something that you praised, not in Philadelphia. In Philadelphia, homosexuality was not something that you aspired to be. People taught you as a child to be a man. I'm 72
right.
years old. There's no way, Chris, as a child, your father said, be what you want to be. If you want to play with a Barbie, you can play with a Barbie. If you want to be a little feminine, you put your mother's high heels on, you want to cross them. They didn't do that as a child, when I was a child. Then my daddy didn't tell me, you can put my mother's high heels on. Today, you can do that. The child can be, if he has some tendencies to want to put heels on, whatever, people say, hey, let the child be what he want to be, blah, blah, blah. But I'm trying to explain to you, Chris, I was born in Philadelphia in 1948. As a young boy, everything was geared toward you becoming a man, growing up to be a man. There was homosexuality. There was things that people did. They used to call them sissies, names, like you said. But you was not going to be inspired to be that. That was not what they taught you. Does that kind of make sense what I'm saying to you?
Yeah, but Russell, I stay out of it because everything is based on sex. It's based on sex. A man is still a man and a woman is still a woman. Everything is based on that. The argument is about sex. Is it right or wrong?
Sex is no longer sex no more. Sex used to be between a man and a woman. Sex is no longer that no more. Sex is not, you can't base everything on sex now, because sex has changed when it comes to the definition of sex. Sex was between a man and a woman. It's no longer that. That's not what sex is today. You got people who are pansexual, homosexual, asexual, gay, trisexual. Sex is, you can't even base it on sex today. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I don't want nobody. I don't want nobody come knocking on your door and marching. So, so
well,
I ain't gonna talk about it.
I'm not gonna say anything wrong. I'm not gonna denounce anybody or say something derogatory about somebody. I'm not gonna give anybody a reason to knock on my door. I'm just telling people that's why I'm leaving it alone, son.
I mean, it's all in entertainment. If you hear any comedians, they talk about that.
You got people that entertain. You got comedians. You got people who are transgender. They entertain. They're successful today. I mean, look at Ellen DeGeneres. I mean, she got bigger once she said she was gay. Once she said she was gay, she's the most non-threatening gay woman I've ever seen in my life. Everybody loves Ellen DeGeneres. Nobody don't love her. So the difference between her and Rosie O'Donnell is just like night and day. People love that woman.
Well, maybe she met some men in her life that couldn't fulfill. Some ladies, so don't forget, sex is one of those things. It's more than a soulmate. It becomes a competition once the lights go out. It's either you the champ or you the contender. And that's what happened.
I like that, Chris. I might steal that one, man.
Yeah,
the lights go out,
either
you a champ or you a contender. That's a good one, Chris. When it comes to sex, when the lights go out, either you are a champ or you a contender.
That's it.
That's it. With the light, I'm gonna steal that one, Chris. I like that one, man. That's a true statement. When you go to bed with somebody, either you're a champ or you're a contender. Because if you ain't putting it down, then they're gonna get somebody else who's a champion. Man, somebody got to be a champion
in
the bed
with
the bedroom.
And a lot of ladies go through that, man. And you've been when your learning process, and you were one that maybe went to high school with you, and she was hot as a firecracker, and you just couldn't do it because you hadn't learned the art of it on how do you maintain your stamina while she gives away hers. So maybe that's it. Because if you ever ask ladies. You keep the bed made up. Don't make the bed over. What you have a carry out over there or something?
A what now?
Every now and then you leave, and I hear you say that'll be $7.
I'm going to end the show right now. But make the long story short, man, this has been a heck of a show.
Either you a champ or you a contender.
Something that's sex, man. I like that. This has been pulling your eyelids open with our special guest. We're going to have Chris back on because we had some audio difficulties this morning. We're going to have Chris back on again and do another show. Well, we're going to edit this show, but make long story short, it was a great show, great information, and you are truly a historical person in this town. This is the Russell Price Morning Show, pulling your eyelids open. We'll see you tomorrow morning. Spread the word. Just